Bruce's hand out, so we might as well. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the session on accountability and transparency. We're going to hear from Steve Crocker in a second, just very briefly. We're going to hear from Steve. We're going to hear from some people on some aspects of the ATRT. At each point, we're going to stop and take questions because this is about feedback from you. And at the end, we're also going to look at lessons learned and take some feedback. And it's great to see most of the members of the ATRT team are here. Steve.
Thank you very much, Chris. So can we have the first slide or the next slide? Oh, that's me. I've got to do that. I have control. That's unusual. So purpose of today's discussion, as it shows, review of the ATRT implementation, discuss the results to date and the effect on ICANN's transparency and accountability, and discuss potential focus and process changes for the next ATRT review. And I'm particularly interested in making sure that we hit hard on the first bullet there, that is, where are we and how are things going. A key point of this session is not just a one way for us to tell you things, but to also listen, so we want to hear from you. ATRT review sits within the context of the affirmation of commitments that was signed in 2009 that reaffirmed ICANN's independence and commitment to accountability, transparency, and public interest, commitment to DNS security and stability, commitment to competition, consumer trust and choice, to international participation, and established a system of periodic community reviews and related activities. One of these reviews is the Accountability and Transparency Review. The others that in parallel are the Security Stability Resiliency Review and the Who Is Review. And there's a fourth one that we haven't done yet, and I apologize for not being able to remember at the top of my head, but it'll become evident. So these periodic reviews are set up for every 3 years and require us to report. And I guess the fourth one is on promoting competition, consumer trust and choice. So the ATRT Accountability Transparency Review Team did their first review, as I think everybody is quite aware, produced a set of 27 recommendations. We on the board formally accepted all of those 27 recommendations, a debatable strategy on our part because it set up the expectation that we would treat each and every review with the same warmth, and I'm going to have to repeatedly explain that there is a substantive process involved in going from the review teams, any of the review teams' reports, to what the commitments then get made. But in the case of the ATRT, we did accept, in fact, all of the 27 recommendations, and that moved us promptly into the question of, okay, now let's get those implemented. That's been a very active, and it's a rather massive and complex operation, divided up into major groupings, some for the GAC, some for the board, some for other groups. And that's what we're going to focus on in depth today. We are, as would be absolutely predictable, not as far along as we want to be, not as far along as everybody else would like us to be. And on the other side, we have done a huge amount of work and made quite a lot of progress. Some of the recommendations are completely implemented. Some are nearing completion, and a lot of work's been done. And there's probably a few cases where there's room for digging in a little more accurately and getting control of them. Here's the agenda, the ATRT recommendations fall into the three broad categories, public input and multilingual access. Phyllis and Christina will be the primary speakers. On the GAC commitments, Bill Graham and I think Manal is hi there, will be able to respond. And on things related to the structuring and commitments from the board, Bruce Tonkin, vice chair of the board, is here. And then we'll turn things over to Denise for tracking and measurement. And then we have some lessons learned out of all of this, even at this point, and more to come, which Krista Spain will speak to, and then I'll try to wrap up. We have until 1:30, I'm told, and it would be good for us not to run over, and it wouldn't be bad if we are able to wrap this up. But there's no desire to shortchange ourselves, so I hope there's quite vigorous interactions. So with that, Chris, did you want to do this, or should I just go directly to Phyllis and Christy? So you guys are now in charge, which has actually been always the case.
Yes, that's me. Phyllis Yılmaz, ICANN staff, Senior Director of Participation and Engagement. I will just quickly give an update on the public comment related ATRT implementations. There were four main recommendations relating to the system is put around the public comment periods of ICANN. And these are stratification and prioritization, ATRT recommendation 15, separate comment and reply periods, ATRT recommendation 16 and 17, and annual list of upcoming issues. The first one, stratification and prioritization, as we understand it from the review teams, documentations, and consultation, is that there is an amount of and volume, high volume of public comment periods that are opened at ICANN fora. And what relates to who and what is prior for them requires some kind of categorization among the periods issues, so that the reader can make an knowledgeable choice or preference in terms of prioritization. Separate comment and reply was addressing another problem. There is a tendency among the community and the groups, whatever the duration of a public comment period is, we often receive the comments very much at the end of and last day of that period. There are reasons for that. There's a consensus building consensus system within the groups, and they want to go through that process first before they submit their unified response to an issue. However, there is also, I guess, some time management considerations. And the response to that was that if we provide a reply period, then we can encourage some kind of dialogue to go back to the previously submitted comments and make further remarks regarding the submitted issues previously. Last one, recommendation 21, was about raising awareness. Again, there is a high amount of or volume and traffic of public comment periods that are opened at ICANN fora, and one of the issues is it is good to be aware of what is coming. We all have agendas, groups have their own agendas, working groups often know what and when they will be seeking further input from the community. So why not list these somewhere and make a list out of that so that there can be initial awareness and knowledge what's coming up. So in February 2011, all these recommendations were put up for public comment period themselves, and to have a check on from the wider community. And April 2011, as ICANN staff, we started our initial planning, which then followed by the approval from ICANN board on the initial implementation plans in June 2011. Between June and November 2011, what we did was we went out and worked with the community, and I will give some details about how we have done this in a minute. And then by January 2012, which is the beginning of this year, we introduced a new system. So this gradual implementation basically was founded on first providing some consistency among the public comment periods and how we display them. The main thing was adding certain data tokens and making a habit of using them through some specific templates which are integrated now among staff, and we all use the same templates to provide similar kind of information. The purpose, the status, the next steps, so what's going to happen after this public comment period are all consistent parts of each and every public comment now. And we also, in June 2011, were finished already with the implementation of Recommendation 21, which was publishing the upcoming public comments. June and November, we worked with the community, fine-tuning the details. And how we did this, basically, we went out and made a call to the community leaders, SOAC chairs, and to the constituencies. And we collected a group of volunteers, about 20 people. We sat down and worked with them, and I again, very much appreciate the work that has been done by that focus group. They tremendously provided information for us to work on these details. And we fine-tuned the implementation plans based on that feedback gathered from the focus group. And then further on, we opened the public comment period during the October months to receive wider community feedback on the details. So what happened is basically after that we went back and started our implementation, and by January 2012 we pushed the button to start all public comments using the new system. Now they're all categorized and tagged. There's a certain list of certain subject category names to be used per public comment, and they are used continuously. We have two cycles, a comment and a reply period. They are distinct and each have a requirement of having at minimum 21 days. If there are no comments in the first period, obviously we don't repeat a reply period over it. An upcoming public comments list is maintained since it has been published, and we maintain it through regular feedback from the community leaders and ICANN staff. So the system has been in use for more than 5 months now. We will reach the end of the six-month period. And there are some observations I would like to make based on my observations together with what I hear from the community in regards to their experience about the new system. Comment reply structure is in focus again. Reply does not seem to be used as intended. Most of the time when you look at the posts we see on the forums, we see that it is almost used as an extension over the comment period. Anything late is submitted during the reply period. And the addressing of the previous comments is quite low. When I looked at the numbers, it was about only 7 to 8% of the all posts where a reply was properly submitted addressing a previous comment. Duration of the comment periods is a very important matter. 50% of the public comments opened so far, which is about 20, use the minimum 21 day. And comment period is used as the main time to submit comments, and this is found to be short. And we understand that as most groups have to build that consensus among themselves within their groups, and 21 days is very, very short for that period. What we hear also, there are a few issues where conflicting feedback is coming to us, and we need to refine these all together, talking about them. One of them is, while it is found too short, for some groups, it may be also, it is found to be too long. Maybe reply period 21 days is not needed and can be seen as redundancy. So, some of the thoughts that we heard so far, and we had a session this morning at 9 a.m., with the Public Participation Committee and the community. And there were ideas raised there, and we collected very good feedback there, and we will follow up on that. Some of the ideas were extending the minimum comment period duration, so it's not minimum 21 days, but maybe minimum 30, 35, or 40 days even, and allowing overlapping comment and reply periods, which will both increase the efficiency of the overall elapsed time, but also allow the reply period, which I hear again can be very useful if it is used efficiently. So, and my bigger question at this point also, I would like to engage in a dialogue with everybody at the community as of what exactly do we expect from ICANN public comments processes? Is it somewhere that the statements can be posted to be addressed by the originating organization of the public comment? It can be GNSO, it can be ICANN board, it can be ICANN staff, or is it an environment that we would like to facilitate further dialogue and discussion in a more interactive way, or maybe it is both? So those are some thoughts for future improvements, I guess. Thank you.
Good. Do we want to take questions or comments on this section?
Yes, Jonathan Zook from the Association for Competitive Technology, and as you all know, this is a topic of great interest to me, so I'll probably be coming up frequently, and I don't know where always the right place to put a comment will be given the agenda. But it's interesting how often we're constrained by the words that are put in front of us. I mean, the fact that it was the Accountability and Transparency Review Team suggests that accountability and transparency should be given equal weight, when in reality, transparency is just a means, not an end, a means to accountability. And ultimately, that needs to be the way that we measure the success of these programs. And the best analogy I can come up with for the comment portion of this is a little bit like creating industrial policy to encourage innovation in electrical vehicles, electrical cars, et cetera, but not thinking about making sure that there's places to plug them in around the city. And I sort of feel like there's a disconnect between improvements to the comment process and its integration into the decision-making process within ICANN. And I believe that the single greatest thing that could be done to improve the public comment process is to increase people's confidence that those comments are actually taken into consideration and made a part of the decision-making process by the very bodies involved. That wasn't part of the recommendations, and so it was sort of outside the scope. And so we get caught up in what the scope of things are. And so I think the public comment team has, the public participation team has done an incredible job of driving this process and implementing the recommendations that they received. I think they just may miss the mark in that I think more people getting involved in comments, more accountability and participation, which should be the objective, will be achieved through better integration of the comment process into the policy process, much as I believe was accomplished to a greater extent with the GAC. And so, I mean, I think that's what, if going forward, that would be the objective that I would try to put forward for the next review team, is looking at how to put more plugs for these electrical cars that we've gone out and try to do the R&D on. Thank you.
Jonathan, would you in my opening remarks, I emphasized not only accountability and transparency, but effectiveness. And so perhaps my ear is tuned to put everything in those terms.
But mine too.
But what I hear you saying fits into sort of the general orientation of you know, this is all fine, but are we actually getting the job done and doing it effectively? And as Fadi said in his he was sitting next to me in the last meeting, I'm sorry, doing it with excellence as well. So is that consistent with what you're trying to say?
I think it's probably consistent with what I'm always trying to say, is that at some level, true accountability is a function of effective participation,
yeah.
and that disconnecting the two, I think we do at our peril,
okay.
And that we really need to see how to make the public comment process something worthwhile to the organization. A monarchy can be transparent, but it's not necessarily accountable. And there's jokes all over the place where the trash can has a sign over it that says, a comment basket and things like that. So having an effective comment process is not necessarily connected to the decision-making process of the institution. And I think that accountability and that connectedness between those two is what's critical.
Yeah, there's a longer discussion about what the right role is, but surely the point that you're making is that it's we're not there yet. And,
yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, Don Blumenthal with the Public Interest Registry. I think the possibility that people were going to use the reply period as an extended comment period is something that was talked about during the early discussions. I still think the potential from the comment and reply thread is very good. Possibly one way to address that would be to extend the initial comment period, give people more time. Another possibility would be to, in some fashion, stress the difference between the two, whether it's a link on each page, on each call for comments, or generally, I'm not a communications person, but get the word out a little better. And I would suggest here, at the risk of ratting people out, or however you want to put it, that I would start with ICANN staff, because during the course of this week, I've encountered two situations where even ICANN staff is saying, submit comments until this date, and that date is the end of the reply period, not the end of the comment period. And I think a critical way just to get the word out is to at least start inside. Thanks.
Don, just to let you know, one of the things that the PPC, the Public Participation Committee, has talked about, and it came up again this morning in the public consultation, is along the lines of what you said, is to actually make you reply. So you actually, the system makes you reply. So you actually have to go to a comment and hit reply. And whilst that won't necessarily stop people from typing things that have got nothing whatsoever to do with the comment, it's a sort of training tool to say this is actually about replying. So that's one way of working on that.
It would be. I know when we were talking about this, I was on the focus group. There are risks to that approach, too, in terms of the way people like to comment. But I think if it's the way that to make the mechanism really work, that would be a good alternative.
Thank you.
Hi, Louis Lee. Chair of the ASO Address Council, a former member of ATRT 1.0. I want to note that the incoming CEO, Fadi Shahadi, is here with us, and thank you very much for coming to not only to receive the report, but hear the feedback in person. I want to note that earlier, some of the chairs of the SOs and ACs and Rod and Akram chatted about this topic, and we had some ideas, some suggestions, and I'll make these public right now. And please note that these are not vetted in any way, just discussion, and I'm sure some of them have already been considered. Optional staff notice, if possible, up to 5 days. So this is with the idea that, and thank you for the annual what's coming up, but if you know that something's coming up in the next week, just a note, then we can start working on it internally without seeing a public notice coming out for the topic, for the comment. if that's possible, oftentimes you only get it within hours, 24 hours. So, of course, we understand that. Completely optional, right? Not vetted. Another one is optional SOAC request to extend the comment period. That way, we recognize that it's the time might not always be set up correctly or judged, or maybe at the time you set it up, it seemed right, but then upon looking at it, you need more time. I don't know what mechanism we would use to do that. Just an idea. Optional SOAC notification for intent to comment. That way, you would know you can wait for that, or perhaps and try not to end the comment period during an ICANN meeting, or 1 week before, or 1 week after. The number is, you know, flexible, but just the thought of blackout dates. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Werner Stab, I work for CORE Association. I wonder sometimes in the context of accountability and transparency whether we are, as in the French Revolution, when people talked about human rights while the guillotine was working full speed. So we're talking about a very important subject, and at the same time we haven't been heeding even the meaning of the words of the things that we talk about. For instance, lately, the most important decisions that were made, the most far-reaching ones, have not even been discussed. And the decisions themselves, reimbursing that, the decisions about were about not deciding. This is probably the worst we can reach. You know, not only did we not talk about the decisions we made, in this case, the chelargery, but the point of that decision was not to take responsibility. So we lost on accountability, which replaced by paranoia, you know, and we lost on transparency, which replaced by opacity. So it's good to talk about common periods.
Thank you. Let me call on Phyllis to respond, belatedly, my fault, to Louis' comments.
Thank you, Steve. Phyllis Yilmaz. Thanks for the suggestions, and they are very practical and they can be implemented very quickly. I just want to raise awareness. We are doing some of them already, and it is not known, so I want to use the mic to let everybody know so they can find the right information in the right place. It is not exactly the way you described, but what we are sending out now are weekly announcements for the public comments that are about to be closed within the next 10 days. So what you're suggesting is different, but we are already doing that, and I think what you suggested we can also implement. The other thing is the extensions. We have raised this and responded to this all the time. They are possible. Please, if you think that you need more time, contact the staff contact person that is listed on the public comment period, and we favor those extensions. If there is no pressing deadline, in some cases, like in GNSO, they have to follow their PDP and there's a deadline, they have to fit that in. But in most of the cases, I'm reported that extensions were favored. So please let us know. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
It's a longer-term point, and it connects to what somebody earlier said. So what do we do with the comments?
Repeat your name, please, because it was not taken into account.
Can you state my name?
No, you can say better than me.
Maarten Boterman.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Almost correct.
Maarten Boterman.
It's M-A-A-R-T-E-N. Yeah, this is close enough. Good. Well, the good thing is, in this session, we're not on a clock, so it doesn't go on. Basically, it's a longer-term thing. It's what do you do with the comments? It's not about the comments. It's about knowing what is good for the constituency, what's good for the stakeholders. And what I suggested last year was to go to a scheme where you do, on a structured basis, ex-ante assessments of what you're doing, impact assessments, as has been done currently by several governments, UNDP and other organs in this world. That makes you collect a structured input on what the effect of specific measures would be on new policy decisions. Part of that is always the public consultation, because you cannot assume anybody just gets it out. You need to open the door as well to input from others. But in that way, you make sure that the effect of what you are about to decide on stakeholders gets tabled as well as possible. So I want to plead for that again. I've sent out some information to several people, which is received by interest, and I don't see it progressing, and I would really recommend it to get some attention. Thank you.
Yeah, Bruce?
Yeah, thanks for the suggestion. One of the things I think is a challenge, and it comes up in some of the other accountability and transparency recommendations, is this challenge between a simple public comment on something the staff are basically implementing versus a policy development process. The policy development process that's in the GNSO actually incorporates what you have suggested. In fact, there is a requirement in the report that goes to the board to include impact statements from each of the constituencies, for example. So we seem to have this strange model where we've got a very detailed process that nobody wants to use that incorporates all the things that people keep coming up to the mic and asking for, that takes time, versus an ad hoc process where we're using public comment, which is unstructured. You know, it's an open forum, and it's not structured, and then we're attempting to use that. So I think that's one of our big challenges, is when do we use which tool, basically?
One small addition. Often this is done by indeed hired consultants, but independent people, so not by the constituency itself, and that helps. And we're not talking big money here, but the fact that it's by independent experts that don't have a stake in it helps.
Good. Thank you very much, Martin. So after the two of you who are now standing there, we'll close this off and move on to the next thing. I hope you weren't trying to come up, Peter, too. Good. All right, Sebastian.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much. I think we must. I must speak to you. So this is why I turn to yourself. This is the third meeting today in which we discuss a question related to PPC, a meeting on outreach in which the members of the Public Participation Committee were not invited, where it doesn't matter. The public meeting of the PPC, we were speaking about the same subjects. So we have time to speak about the same subject again and again, and we have no time to speak about certain subjects. So it's a pity. I want to ensure you that the comments made about public comments are going to be taken into account by the PPC in a very serious way. It is difficult to come to a consensus on these subjects, on this issue, but we are going to arrive to do it.
Thank you very much, Sebastian.
Paul Foody, speaking on my own behalf. We're talking about accountability and transparency. To be perfectly honest, ICANN is too big to fail. So in exactly the same way as when the banks got into all that trouble a couple of years ago, there was very little, if any, accountability. If ICANN makes a complete hash, there will be equally very, very little accountability. The best that you guys can hope is to be transparent. And in the way that the new CEO has promised, we're looking at super transparency. So given that, when we talk about public comments, can we recognize that the public, so far as the internet is concerned, is 4 billion people? And if you're getting comments from only a handful of those people, only the people who attend ICANN meetings, there's something very wrong in terms of the transparency and the publicity that your actions are taking. Incredibly, most people in the world know more about Mark Zuckerberg's honeymoon in Rome than they will know about the GTLD project. And yet, the BBC, Bloomberg, ABC, CBS, ITV, The Guardian have all applied for new GTLDs. If that doesn't indicate that they are aware of the extent to which the new GTLDs will completely replicate the .com registry, I don't know what does. And yet those guys have completely failed to bring this matter to the public attention. So in the interest of transparency, I'd like to know, does ICANN publish anywhere a list of the number of hits it gets to its websites? Does it monitor how the number of hits rises and falls? Is that on record anywhere that I could see? It's, do you know how many individuals are going to the ICANN site at any time?
Anybody want to respond to that? I was puzzled by something you said. Can you explain Mark Zuckerberg? I don't know the reference.
Well, the fact that the BBC reported that, you know, that was blanket.
I'm teasing you, but sorry.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. I know there's some internal tracking. I don't know that of hits and so forth. It raises in my mind, anyway, the question of whether or not that's a intrinsically valid measure of anything. And, I mean, it opens as many questions as it might answer. But it's an interesting point of tracking how many hits on the website and so forth.
Do you have any idea offhand?
I don't track it myself, that's for sure. So no, and you know, it's not a single number. It depends what you're talking about at any given time and how many articles. But I know those mechanisms are in there. But as I say, it's not clear what the what the intrinsic validity would be of having those numbers in relationship to 4 billion people. I mean, that's a more complicated subject, obviously.
Thank you.
Thank you. So with that, I want to move on to the GAC operations engagement interaction with the board. Call on Bill and Manal to speak to those issues. I apologize. Back up. Start over. Christina.
Thank you, Steve. I'm Christina Rodriguez from Language Services, ICANN Language Services. I'm going to speak about very briefly about the ATRT recommendation number 18. This recommendation says board should ensure access to documentation within policy development processes and multilingual access to maximum extent feasible. This means that ICANN Language Services needs to make information about ICANN and its work accessible to those who speak English and other languages to provide that we continue to provide participation in the effectiveness of the multi-stakeholder model. And the second point is, of course, that it makes ICANN more effective as a global organization providing multilingualism. And the ICANN Language Services, or the multilingual access, provides to ICANN the possibility of having the bylaws updated in a synchronized manner in all 6 UN languages. The English, of course, and the 5 non-English UN languages being these: Arabic, Chinese, French, Spanish, and Russian. We translate also the postings of all war-related documentation to be completed within a period of 21 days. Most of the times this happens in less than 21 days. And also, we worked very hard on the creation of the ICANN Language Services Policy and Procedures document. This document, as implicit in its title, puts down actually all the processes for translation, interpretation, and scribing, which is real-time transcription, transcription after the fact, and all related services. In regards to achievements accomplished so far, many of the things that we are explaining or proposing in the language services document are already being implemented. However, we did put for public comment the language services policy and procedures document on May 18. The public comment will be closed on July 2nd, and we really encourage as many people as possible to comment and to ask questions in the forum. A substantial number of policies and procedures, as I say before, containing the document have already been implemented. The extensive language support for the new GTLD program is one of them. They expanded and improved the conference interpretation for supporting organizations and advisory committees is also have also been implemented. Not only that, but it is our set of interpreters who actually are the ones providing that support on teleconference calls. So this translates also in the quality of those teleconferences being interpreted with people that is already very knowledgeable about subject matters and what is going on and happening in the different ASOs and ACs. The additional language support for the GAC is also something that is mentioned in the language services document, and it's also something that is being already implemented. And also an extended support in regards to transcription for sessions during ICANN meetings. So that's pretty much it. So I leave it up to any comments or questions that they may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we're doing some learning on the fly here. Let me ask you to keep track of your questions, and we'll run through these presentations lest we run completely out of time and have a composite question session toward the end. And with that, let me now turn over to Bill Imanol on GAC operations, engagement, and interaction with the board.
Thank you, Steve, and we're very glad to both be here. Manal and I are the co-chairs of the Board GAC Recommendations Implementation Working Group, and we have six recommendations, all of which are underway at the moment, that we'd like to report on. So without much more introduction, let's just move through them. Number nine, Manal.
Recommendation number nine, and this has to do with the clarity of the GAC advice, and the joint working group have agreed to what constitutes a GAC advice. The GAC also worked intersessionally on a new format or a new structure for the GAC communique, which aims to provide, again, more clarity to identify the GAC advice and easily extracted to be followed up later. We tried to work on the structure as well as the clarity of the words and to the extent possible provide expected deadlines for the, our advice.
We have already seen the impact of that on the most recent sets of advice that we've received from the GAC. It's been much easier to understand exactly what we were being advised to do, so I'm happy to say that's working. Recommendation 10, tracking GAC advice. This has been a long-standing issue for us, just making sure that we have correctly captured and understood the advice that comes from the governments to the board, and then tracking what we've done with it, just to make sure nothing falls off the table, because this advice has a special status under the bylaws, as you know, so we do need to be on top of it. It's taken some work, a lot of work by ICANN staff, I must say, to create an online GAC advice register, which is publicly available. At the moment, it's in beta version, I guess, but it's an operational beta. We've captured all of the advice we could easily find since the very first meeting, and we're now in the process of going back as time permits and verifying the older advice. But it's really operational for current advice, so we're kind of taking a two-step approach to it, since it's most important that this be useful going forward. So, as I say, it's completed, but it's open to improvements as needed.
As Bill mentioned, we consider this as a great progress that had been made. The register is online and publicly posted and could be reached through the GAC website. There's a tab called GAC Advice, from which there's a link to the online register. So if anyone would like to have a look. And again, as Bill mentioned, all the past GAC advice have been entered to the register, and we decided to get it operational for future GAC advice as we work on making sure the past GAC advice has been entered completely and accurately and the status of all advice.
Thank you. Recommendation 11 logically concerns with the way GAC advice is dealt with to ensure that there's a timely provision and consideration of GAC advice and mechanisms for follow-up. This has been partly dependent on the work on the register, but at our meeting on Sunday this week, we reviewed some staff documents concerning the pre-consultation mechanisms that already exist and the bylaw consultation mechanisms in the event that the board decides to act against GAC advice. Those are the most serious instances. We decided to start with those and make sure they're well understood, well documented, and that both sides know what they're facing if we get to a situation where we as a board may choose to ignore advice or think there might be a problem. So we're dealing with those two formal things at the moment. Then moving to number 12, which I think is extremely important, working towards earlier GAC involvement in the policy development process. Again, on Sunday, we reviewed some very useful documents that outlined the GNSO and CCNSO processes and the way that the operating principles say that GAC advice should be sought and dealt with. There are some fairly significant differences between the two, and we've established a team of volunteer GAC members and volunteer board members to look at whether there are any changes needed there or whether we can work within those frameworks to make sure the GAC provides inputs to processes earlier on so that there are no surprises.
So just very quickly, yes, we've been looking how to include the GAC advice early within the PDP process because, as you may all know, the GAC advises the board, and when issues are escalated to the board, then it's pretty much at its final stage. So by then, GAC advice could be negatively received and would delay decisions even further. So we're outreaching to say how we can provide this GAC input early enough. And out of experience, it has been very helpful providing GEC advice early in the IDN fast track process, for example, as well as the framework of interpretation with the CCNSO. Again, noting that noting the board's responsibility in informing the GAC of matters that may affect public policy issues.
Thanks, Manal. And speaking personally, this strikes me as being something that's critical to advancing and improving the way the multi-stakeholder model works by really having the GAC playing a much earlier and much more integrated role than has been in the past. I have way too many buttons up here. Number 13, better inform GAC and staff. It's been strongly recommended that there be a mechanism to ensure the GAC is actually informed when there's public policy issues being discussed in any part of ICANN, and I think that makes sense. It would be extremely onerous for the GAC to track all of the other processes as well as doing its own. There is actually in the bylaws a responsibility for the board to play that informational role, and so we're looking at how we can improve that and make that both earlier and more effective.
And we already had an additional meeting with the board here in Prague, and we do very much appreciate the time that was spared for an additional meeting with the GAC specifically on the topic of GTLDs.
Then moving to the final recommendation, increasing the level of support and commitment of governments. On the support side, I'm happy to report that interpretation has been introduced to the GAC meetings. Funding to bring GAC members to the meetings has increased. There is active discussion about having a high-level GAC meeting in Toronto, bringing in people in higher positions than normally attend the GAC to increase their awareness and engagement with ICANN. And we're very much aware that there are many more things can be done there. There's ongoing discussion and work at the staff level, at the board level, and at the GAC level to increase both the commitment and the levels of support.
Just to add very quickly that we are very excited by having interpretation introduced to the GAC meetings by Toronto. We are promised to have the 6 UN languages in addition to Portuguese. Funded members have been increased from 6 per meeting to 20. And as Bill mentioned, our Canadian GAC colleagues are preparing for a high-level meeting as per Recommendation 14 that would increase awareness of ICANN and GAC's role within ICANN to senior government officials so that they can, if not members, they can join, and if members, they could spare their representatives the time, the resources, and the authority to participate in a timely and effective manner. So
that's where we are with this. I'm happy to say there's progress on all these points. In closing, I'd just like to say that I'm personally very happy with how the working group is functioning. I had some night terrors when the GAC decided that it would have all of its members on this working group. I thought that might be a challenge, but it's worked out very well. As a matter of fact, the board members are also participating, and we're getting great support from Jeannie Ehlers and Jamie Headland of the ICANN staff, which we truly appreciate. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Let me again suggest keep track of your questions. We'll move on now to Bruce, talking on board operations composition and review of decisions. Bruce.
Am I in the right spot? That doesn't look right.
You've turned into.
C'est Bostanki qui parle. Vous avez regardé Denise, donc je n'étais pas sûre si c'était moi. Bien, donc mes diapos ne sont pas dans le bon ordre et ça ne marche toujours pas. Est-ce que vous avez les diapos de Bruce?
Do we want to...
Why don't you start talking?
I will start talking. Luckily, I have slides in front of me. But not very transparently at the moment. Okay, there's about 20 slides. They actually are published on the internet. If you actually go to the Prague website and the schedule and click through to this session, all these presentations are actually there, so you can actually look at these slides online. I don't propose to cover all that material because a lot of it is saying, you know, this is work that's been done. I want to pick up perhaps a few more on things that are sort of recently done and you know, about to be published, basically. So firstly, one of the topics that we have considered is providing some guidance to the nominating committee on the skill sets required by the board. And the board feels that the fundamental guidance is actually in the bylaws. So there is 6 points in those bylaws that talk about what we're seeking. So obviously people with integrity, objectivity and intelligence, people that understand ICANN's mission, people that have the broadest cultural and geographic diversity, people in the aggregate have familiarity with how the IP addressing and domain name systems work. People who are willing to serve as volunteers, and people who are able to work and communicate in written and spoken English. So those are all the ones that are in the bylaws. In addition to that, we've given a little bit of further guidance. One is that we're looking for directors that have board governance or equivalent experience with a medium-sized organisation that has an established board whose directors are independent and appointed without participation of the CEO. That a director should have board governance or equivalent experience with non-profit organisations, that a director should have experience working effectively in meetings that are handled with board members distributed in multiple locations and time zones, where the group's sort of 20 or more. And so obviously we make extensive use of teleconferencing tools, instant messaging, and web conferencing tools. So some familiarity with those meeting techniques, I guess. We've also talked a bit about we've done an audit of the skills within the board and identified you know, where we think we've got good skills and where we think that we have a lower level of skills. So where we have strong experiences in the operation of GTLD registries and registrars, with CCTLD registries, with IP address registries, with internet technical standards and protocols, with ICANN policy development procedures, the legal traditions and the public interest, and strong existing skills in strategic planning, budgeting, public outreach and international relations. Where there is a lower level of skills is executive management in an organisation as big as ICANN, in regulatory and compliance frameworks, and in audit procedures. But we also said that we're not specifically looking for competition lawyers, nor are we looking for professional auditors. We're looking really for people that have had experience on boards addressing some of those areas. So we're seeking people that have experience in those issues from a board governance perspective rather than being, you know, professionals necessarily in those specific disciplines. So that's some of the guidance that we've given the nominating committee, and you know, we'll make sure that guidance is visible publicly, but certainly it's in the record here today. Let me see if I've got slides. No, probably not. One more minute. Okay. So I'm just looking. So I'm up to about slide 5. If those are following this on the online section, here we go. Okay. Wow, it's got even special effects. So, you know, a lot of the material we've
you've probably already started to see, you know, we're starting to publish rationales for board decisions. You know, board members have the opportunity to make statements if they vote against things. We're starting to provide more translations of materials. We've just talked about the board member skill set that we've notified the nominating committee of. Another thing that we're starting to do is looking a lot more at training and skill building. We spent quite a bit of time last year on training with respect to confidentiality and conflicts and ethics. And really what we're looking at doing is creating more training materials in that area that can be used by the community as a whole, not just the board. And right now we're doing a self-assessment of board performance. Another thing is trying to get consistency between each nominating committee, because in the past each nominating committee has been responsible for developing its own procedures, and there's a bit of overlap in that there are members from the previous nominating committee that carry through a bit of history, and so there's sharing of knowledge there. Recently the board approved a set of transparency guidelines, that was a few weeks ago. Another area we're starting to look at is making it a bit more transparent what the conflict of interest procedures are within the nominating committee. And that's a little tricky because we can't exactly publish that a particular committee member had a conflict with respect to somebody that's applying for a role, because that would breach the confidentiality of the person that's applying. But we do need to provide certainly some transparency regarding how conflicts are being handled within the nominating committee. One of the things you would have seen this meeting, we've had a little bit of a history of rushing things. Often we've had a very busy week of meetings. In past meetings, often the staff and a number of the board directors haven't been able to attend the gala because they're working on board resolutions for Friday. And we've also had instances of drafting board resolutions at 2 o'clock a.m. on the Friday morning before the board meeting. And certainly we've made errors. And so one of the things we're trying to do is make sure that any materials where, especially major decisions, are drafted at least 7 days in advance. And when we have a meeting like this, and Steve will probably talk to this later in the public forum, but we'll give some feedback to the community on what the board's working on, but we'll finalise the board resolutions in our next monthly meeting. And we're also starting to use email tools a bit more to approve more administrative matters. So, you know, if we have to approve, appointing a board member to a particular committee or something, we'll do that via email rather than taking up the time of teleconferences. Compensation was introduced, so that's in place. This is one of the key topics. I've heard this come up numerous times this week, is, you know, when is something that should actually go out to policy? Is digital archery something that's just sufficient for the staff to basically implement, or is that something that should go through a policy development process? Are the recommendations around who is authentication, is that just something for the ICANN staff to negotiate with registrars based on input from the community, or should that be a policy development process? And the reality is a lot of this comes down to time. A lot of people are saying, we want you to do things faster and start to create new processes to do that faster, which somehow always end up taking just as long as the original process did. We are looking at that in more detail. We have a working paper on that that the Board Governance Committee will consider. We'll then put that out for public comment. And hopefully we can have a substantial session on this at the Toronto meeting, really trying to understand some guidelines or parameters as to when something should be done, simply as an executive implementation, and when does something really need to go through the full community multi-stakeholder consultation process. Certainly we're trying to publish more of the board briefing materials and voting statements. I think we've covered most of that. Translating stuff. This is a point, I guess, that was made by Martin Borman earlier, but Are we getting the right inputs? And sometimes I've heard a few comments this week saying, you know, one of the constituencies suggested that we do a human rights audit. Someone else has suggested that we do a privacy audit. The difficulty, of course, is that when you're relying purely on volunteers, you know, maybe this material doesn't come through when it needs to. And so that's something to consider. Are we entirely reliant on volunteers producing these policy inputs, or, you know, when should we actually commission some form of expert or expert group to develop some inputs? This is an area that it's been delayed, and it's partly been delayed by the work that we've been doing on ethics and conflicts, and we've gone through three external reviews. Just finished the last review, and that was published a few weeks ago. Now we're really starting to focus on the accountability mechanisms, and there are really three. There is the Ombudsman, so if you disagree with a decision of the board or a decision by staff, you can go to the Ombudsman, and the Ombudsman will attempt to mediate an outcome for you. That facility is really underused. You know, we reviewed the Ombudsman today, and the Ombudsman gets many complaints that are not in the area of the Ombudsman, so typically about you know, difficulties people might have with customer service or the registrar. But there was probably, I think, something like 15 cases that the Ombudsman's done, I think, for the year that is in his area. So really we're not using that feature enough, but people should consider that. The second one is reconsideration, and that's where when after the board has made a decision, we've had a couple come through recently, the ISC and Red Cross asked for a reconsideration of a board decision. We've also had the intellectual property constituency ask for a reconsideration of a decision around .cat. So we probably get a few of those a year. But the question is, what are the right grounds for reconsideration? Is it okay to bring up new material that wasn't available at the time the board made its original decision? So should the board look at changing a decision because some material fact has changed? Or is the reconsideration purely another look at the same facts? You know, those sorts of things are understanding what the parameters should be for reconsideration. And the third area is an independent tribunal, which is, to my knowledge, has only been used once, and that was for the XXX decision. That was a multi-million dollar process. And so when you look at the costs of the parties that initiated that decision, you're really saying, well, the average organisation couldn't afford to even run that process. One of the things to look at is, can we improve that process to get the cost down? That might be, you know, putting page limits on how long a submission can be, so you're not paying lawyers, you know, $1,000 a page to read something. So that's looking at process improvements and obviously whether that mechanism can be improved further. So our thinking here is that we will get some independent experts probably forming some form of panel, but also engage a law firm to look at particularly how to improve the effectiveness of those processes. So that's a major work item that the Board Governance Committee is just starting. And you'll certainly hear more about that in Toronto. Ombudsman, as I mentioned, I think that the standards and methods used by the Ombudsman are sound, but the Ombudsman has perhaps not been given enough work. So you guys need to think about that. And reconsideration process, again, you know, partly linked to that review we're looking at to say how can we improve the reconsideration process. Not even sure what this one's about. Intensifying the future opportunities. Yeah, okay, so that's right. This is basically saying that this is work that we're just commencing, and obviously the papers in these topics will be published for review. And certainly the policy executive, that means, you know, where do we use policy function, where do we use staff to work on something, and the work we're doing on accountability mechanisms. And that's it. So, you know, a lot of work going on there. Certainly happy to take any questions.
Yeah, we're going to hold those to the end, but we're getting closer to the end.
Hi. Since we're really eager to hear comments and input from the floor, I'll sort of skip my slides, encourage you to look at them on the session website, and briefly tell you we're tracking everything that we do on the accountability and transparency projects. Everything can be found on the accountability and transparency webpage. There's a big button on ICANN's homepage, so it's easy to find. We keep that regularly updated. It has a lot of information, not only about ATRT, but also the affirmation of commitment. Measuring what we do, obviously, is important. An elemental component of this is to come up with the right metrics, to have a quantitative baseline that we can work from to improve and really determine how accountable and transparent we are and where we need to be. That work is ongoing. More information is on the website. And just a quick plug for the next accountability and transparency review team. The affirmation of commitments commits us to doing this every 3 years. So later this year, we'll start to issue notices and connect with the supporting organizations and advisory committees about populating a new team. I'll turn it over to Chris.
Thanks, Denise. Okay, so if there are questions for Christina or Bruce or Bill and Manal, and most importantly, we also want to hear feedback. We want to hear lessons learned. So it can be general stuff. Form an orderly queue behind Marilyn.
Marilyn's forming an orderly queue behind me.
Okay.
Would you line up by height, please?
I think we're close, you know.
Becky.
It's either Marilyn or
Becky,
me first.
You're first. Go.
Becky Burr, New Star. I keep forgetting what my identity is here this week. First of all, I want to say this represents a lot of work. Obviously, there is a lot of work to go, but I do think we should all take a minute and think about the glass half full and thank Denise and the people on the board and on the various committees who are working on this. I have a couple of questions or suggestions maybe for Bruce. I have been for a long time very interested in the sort of independent review issue. I would encourage you, if you're going to have to be careful about having a law firm be the only source of input on improving those processes, because you need to balance sort of risk aversion with sort of effectiveness. And to me, whether it's 10 pages or 50 pages or 100 pages, that's the problem with the ICM thing. Was it was 7 years down the road? If there was something lighter, quicker, easier, faster up front, maybe voluntary mediation or something like that. So I would just encourage you to think, experiment maybe with some of those.
Let me just be clear. I didn't say we were using a law firm. I said we're using a law firm as part of that, and we actually are going to appoint an independent panel of experts. So it's a combination of a panel of experts and a law firm to help crunch the work, if you like.
Okay.
So it's not one or the other. It's
okay.
Both.
Yeah, I know it's a peculiar thing. I think lawyers are wonderful people,
yeah.
And happen to some of them are my best friends. But
yes.
But part of this is about not getting too bound up in risk aversion.
Yeah. And one of the things that I just want to elaborate, and we can take this offline because you're far more expert than I am, believe it or not, I don't know anything about law. But one of the things was we want an international panel so that we've got people from around the world, but we also wanted to make sure that we're working within the legal construct of ICANN as well. So it's that combination of saying we need some guidance to say that's a great idea, but we can't do it in this legal construct.
And is there a selection process, or how is the independent panel being selected?
Well, actually, we had an open call for members, so if you want to join, it was actually public.
No, I saw that.
Yeah, we didn't actually get as many as we would like, and one of the things we're actually looking for is more people in that area. So we got, I don't know exactly, but Amy might be able to comment, but certainly we had less than 10, I think.
Four.
So we had four. And so one of our concerns was that we couldn't rely solely on an independent panel because we didn't think we had enough depth there. If you know people, please recommend. So we are looking for a richer set.
Looking for volunteers.
Okay.
Is that it? Thanks, Becky. Marilyn.
Chris, yes. So we're running real late, and in the spirit of trying to provide a lot of time, would it be okay with everybody if we run 15 minutes over and add and to run to 1:45 instead of 1:30?
Okay.
No objections. Sold. Thank you, Marilyn.
Thank you. My name is Marilyn Cade. I wanted to ask a question quickly about a statement that I thought I heard Bruce make, and preface it by explaining the position that the business constituency conveyed on the topic. So the topic is qualifications for the board and whether there is a mandatory requirement or even a overzealous demand for having been on previous boards, or if there is comparable experience that is accepted. And we said that because we discussed at length with the nominating committee the need to have a balance on the board and make sure that there were people with knowledge from the community. And, you know, within our own constituency and with many other constituencies, we will not build the experience of senior people from a corporation or an ISP by their work at ICANN. There may be an executive somewhere in the member but we wouldn't get the expertise actually that would meet that. So I wanted to know, were you conveying that as mandatory?
Basically what we've said is the fundamental criteria are the six in the bylaws. And then we've said, in addition to that, you can consider these other factors. So any one of these factors, you're looking at it in aggregate. And so certainly you're not saying we're not trying to find Superman. There's no one person that meets every one of these factors. So we're saying you look at those factors in aggregate. We've also used the term should have board governance or equivalent experience. So that could be as a senior executive or an executive in a company. So it's not just board, it's saying board governance or equivalent experience.
Okay. So my second question, which I will do very quickly, has to do with, something that you just maybe a misstatement. On your last slide, it says policy/executive functions, and in your explanation, you said policy or staff, and we would not refer to staff as executive. So I was trying to understand who the executive...
I think that's just sort of short-form PowerPoint.
Fine. I was just trying to understand what it was.
Yeah.
Okay. Mike.
Thank you, Chris. Mike Palage. Bruce, with regard to your recommendations to the non-com, I fully support it. I think it's constructive, having served on the non-com the previous 2 years. The one caveat I would offer is that any advice... I think that advice needs to be open and transparent when it comes from the board to the community, because last year we received advice from the chair and the president and CEO, which was a little different last year, and I felt a little awkward with the advice that was conveyed to the non-com. So if advice is going to be given to the non-com, I think it's really important that it be open and transparent.
Yeah, we'll publish it. It was only sent recently, and we just wanted to give a chance for the non-com to comment, if they didn't understand something, but we will publish that.
Second point proposal. I'd like to applaud the board for a lot of the work that it has been doing to address ethics concerns, so you should be applauded for that. The one thing, though, that I would like to raise is that with its growing budget, when you look at your current procurement guidelines, only those contracts in excess of $150,000 get posted for RFP. So there's a lot of other money in the growing budget that's being allocated. And Steve, the person to your right, Denise, when she was more involved in the GNSO activity, it was really phenomenal that after each meeting, there was a report posted of every person in the GNSO who received funding, whether it was a hotel, travel. So from that standpoint of transparency, if we are going to be super transparent, showing where some of the money is going is really important. And specifically, when you looked at the CEO's metric report from the last meeting, not from Costa Rica, but the one before, 20% of the attendees at that ICANN meeting were on ICANN's dime, right? So when one out of every five people are being subsidized or paid, 10% of them were ICANN staff or ICANN contractors. The other 12% were fellows or GNSO. So I think it's really important that we show where the money's going. I think that's important. So those are my two points. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
So let me just say, Mike, so we'll take that up and review that. It'd be interesting to, at least from my point of view, to know if there's been a shift in practice. But that said, let me also say, just as a sort of quick response to your numbers, there's a practicality issue, and it's very standard practice to set thresholds and say amounts above this we will exercise more care, and amounts below, there's too many of them to subject them to the same cost.
And just to be clear, I am not trying to micromanage. I'm just saying, when you make decisions and start, $25,000 here or $50,000 here, you can make that. I'm just saying, just let the community know where the money's going.
I thought you were in it for saying pretty soon you're talking about real money. Thank you.
Cheryl.
Thanks very much, Chris. Actually, as the transcript record says, my name is Cheryl Langdonore, and that is a little in-joke, I know, so some of you appreciated it. I think I'm correct that I'm the only ATRT member that is sitting or standing and now talking to you, so I just wanted to take a couple of highlights which, whilst our personal views, I suspect would resonate with the rest of the team that's been here today. I am very pleased with the report we're getting back. We know it's not all finished. We were aware of that before we came in. But things that warmed my heart while I was here today was hearing the real progress that's happened in the GAC board interaction, and we're looking forward to seeing the register in the beta, and things like that are really big ticks from our point of view. Bruce, yeah, you know there's work to be done, but hearing what you've already done with NOMCOM and those sorts of things, they're issues that we were deeply concerned about and that you've addressed in a timely manner. But I wanted to focus on, to some extent, a little bit of Felice and particularly Christina's presentation, because what we were missing, of course, is what you've now managed to provide us with, which is an effective language services policy, admittedly now draft. That's a pivot point that I want to recognise and mark publicly as so important for GAC, for non-English speaking business constituency members across all of the constituencies in the GNSO. Clearly would have measurement of interest in CCNSO, but perhaps not. And GAC and ALAC and at large obviously need it. But thank you for getting it out in advance of this. You'll be fascinated to know we did manage to finalise the ALAC. I got a buzz to say it's actually ratified its comments, despite the fact, Felice, that it opened and ran through an ICANN meeting and that there were no blackout dates. So we managed. You will get your response. It's there and it's... We look forward to hearing the reaction to our comments. But, we used to have blackout dates. That really is important to bring back into the system of comment and reply comment. I was also very pleased, delighted in fact, to see the possibility being looked at of running the reply in some parallel with the comments. So you don't have to wait till the end of a comment period, because that in fact was very much the model we were looking at. And we certainly would value the pressure of pushing people to comment early so that they can start the dialogue. So you probably don't need to respond, but thanks all round. And Denise, you know how we feel about you. Amazing work. Well done.
Thank you.
Cheryl. Cheryl, just before you go, if there's time at the end, can you just have a think about, you and I had a chat about some stuff earlier on the other day about ATRT version 2. So not now, but if you can have a think about that.
I need to apologise then, because I need to get to your FOI working group.
Well, okay. It's not mine.
Okay. Raimundo Becker speaking on a personal basis. The merit of what I am saying is from Cheryl. When we were doing with ITIFS International, the review of the ASO, Cheryl had the very good idea to tell us, please use the AOT report to measure the if the ASO was transparent and accountable. and we used it, and it was a, and I think it's a very good metric for that. So my suggestion is that, that now that the SIC is going to start a new cycle, the SIC and the community should pay special attention on what was made there. And the the recommendations on accountability and transparency in that report, and the reaction of the NRO about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Raimondo. Paul.
Thank you, Chris. Paul Diaz from Public Interest Registry. I won't repeat, share a lot of the concerns, and would like to commend as well for the work that's been done. But two things kind of stand out. Bruce, around recommendation 6, you know, we heard a lot today about what has been accomplished. There's a lot to take on board, a lot to be pleased with, but that particular clarification process between the PDP policy and executive, that's a real high priority issue. It's not met enough milestones. Great to hear that there's going to be community solicitation for input in a process, but in Toronto. So, you know, we're going 3 months before that, and then there'll be a process after. It just seems that that is such an incredibly important issue for the work going forward. And
yeah, I think, to be fair, that that's an ongoing thing. I mean, we're learning as we go. So we're not waiting for Toronto to receive input. We're actually receiving input today. Right, you are giving us input
for
now.
For example.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of what the board was actually asking during this week, particularly on Tuesday, was exactly that question. We used a specific example, which was who is. It was interesting we got different views from different constituencies. Some constituencies said, don't ask anybody, just do it. And other constituencies said, you need to use a public process. What we generally find as a board is if you like the decision, you just want staff to implement it. If you don't like the decision, you want a 3-year public policy process. That's probably the best criteria I could give, right, today, as to when you should use one or the other. If I like it, do it straight away. So our challenge is to come up with some guidelines that work fairly. And what we are going to do, we have a paper and we have been discussing. In fact, we've discussed it at several BGC meetings. So it's not like it hasn't commenced. And in each meeting, we've been asking the community on any particular topic. This week, we received a lot of feedback on digital archery. And part of that feedback was most people have communicated to the board that that was something that should have used a more of a policy approach. So we're listening now. That paper will go out well before Toronto in terms of receiving input. And then we want a bit of a focus session. But it's using examples. It's saying there's at least two coming up now. The Who Is Review report, and there's the security and stability one that's coming out. Those are classic examples. So let's be concrete, because otherwise it's an academic discussion.
Yeah. I think recommendation 6 is a useful one to think about from the point of view of ATRT version 2. Because what didn't happen with the ATRT version 1 was the team is independent, totally, but consulting with staff and saying, here's the sort of recommendation we're heading towards. How would you go about implementing that if you were minded to do so? So the board is just faced with this sort of flat recommendation with some background behind it, and then it's got to sit there and figure out how actually to do that. So maybe one of the tweaks for ATRT 2 would be some kind of liaison or something where people can actually go back and say, they're heading in this direction. Do you, is it workable from a process point of view?
Good. Even with the extension of time, we're going to be rather jammed here.
Okay,
just a very quick request, because Bruce's answer cut me off before the second. Building on what Michael said, it would be very useful. We can see in the community the work the board's doing, the subgroups are working on, et cetera. There's too often not the same transparency or clearness on staff ownership, senior staff ownership, responsibility. Who's accountable, making sure the processes are moving forward, if there are log jams, et cetera. If we're going to have published data on expenses and things like that, it would also help maybe to see more often who exactly is the one who has ownership for these issues.
We're going to need to move to two minutes, if at all possible, please. Mm-hmm.
Certainly. I'm Amy Mashour, and I represent the Association of National Advertisers and the Coalition for Internet Responsible Domain Oversight. And I'm going to talk in my individual capacity as an attorney with who struggled with the initial procedures of the comment dockets and trying to understand how our own comments in the defensive level registration docket actually made it into the tiny decision that actually occurred on that issue. And, you know, I'm telling you, I'm advising Fortune 500 companies who experienced a docket where the docket closed one day before the deadline. Then the comment summary was put forth and completed prior to individuals filing reply comments. And then, ultimately, the new GTLD committee that made a decision had just a few lines of explanation. You know, I am trying to explain to multinational corporations and large brands how our decisions and our interests were heard. And unfortunately, I have very, very little to go on. And I would love to dialogue with you about how to improve that process, because brands are entering the picture. Many have been here for a long time, but we're now coming in as contracted parties. So we do indeed need to make sure that you're held accountable.
Thank you. Did you want to say something, Steve? You went for the microphone, so I thought.
Yeah, I think the thing to say is we hear you loud and clear.
Kieran, when you finish fiddling with the microphone.
Well, it feels a bit... You'll still hear me up here, will you?
Okay, yeah.
Hello, Kieran McCarthy. So, in general, I'm sort of encouraged by from where we were and where we're going to, especially with the GAC was doing extra stuff than was in the report. And there was another aspect where there was, the board is doing extra stuff, which in that sense means that the ICANN is beginning to grasp the concept of being accountable and transparent rather than the you've been given these recommendations and you have to be forced to do line 1.1.2. So that's great. That said, I think that there's huge room for improvement. It's a very formal process that we're running here, and it feels a little bit like if it isn't in 1.6, we're not going to think about it. A good example is the fact that I'm standing here behind a huge PA system in a massive room with not that many people in, talking to you on a huge stage, and it's because that's a default. But it's actually a really kind of bizarre way of having the sort of interaction that we want to have. So while there's improvements, I don't think ICANN is thinking, how do I become more accountable and transparent? How do I look at all the issues that are getting in the way of us appearing accountable and transparent? So I still get a sense as well that ICANN never wants to admit it made a mistake. So even with the digital archery, which I think we could easily call a mistake, there was a justification in there. There's always a justification, not a sort of we made a mistake. So I'd like ICANN to say, well, we made a mistake there, or at least feel that it can say we made a mistake rather than have to put everything through a process. You're looking at me.
I'm looking at you because you're running out of time.
Oh, sorry. So, yeah, and also, for example, capturing the information. So I'm standing here, and it's going to appear on the screen, and the people in this room will hear it. It will then appear in a PDF on a web page somewhere, and we'll all forget about it because we've had 60 of these sessions this week. We're still not capturing what people actually say in a really good way. It's all out there. It's all published. It's all transparent, but we're not capturing it.
Okay.
And I think we can improve on that.
Good. Communications. Jonathan.
Okay. Wow. Just take those old records right on the shelf.
All right. So, Jonathan Zook, the Association for Competitive Technology. I'm looking very, very much forward to the accountability review team coming up. My new campaign is going to be to remove transparency from the goal set and move it into the strategy part of that document. I think accountability is going to be an issue that comes up over and over again for this organization. We had a meeting with the Consumer Stakeholders Group, in which Akram was kind enough to come and join us, and expressed surprise at the fact that all these people that had come on these brands were calling and expecting an account rep to be on the other side of the phone to answer their problems with the process. And I was kind of surprised at his surprise, to be honest. I mean, when I was a consultant and had if I had a $50,000 project with Google, they would expect to get somebody on the phone to answer questions. When you write a check for $20 million, I think you're going to really expect that customer service is a part of what happens. So to go to my old campaign, though, accountability only happens with stated public objectives that can be measured and to which you can be held accountable. And I think we're going to have to go back and revisit that over and over again. I'm really excited by the success, thus far at least, or what seems like the success of the Consumer Metrics Project, Consumer Competition Choice, and Confidence Metrics Project. It seems to be really well received, and I hope it becomes an example for the rest of this entire process, because in the absence of real objective objectives, real accountability will never happen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Urs Schneider. I'm a consultant with CORE. I speak in my independent capacity and some 20 years with the internet and 30 years with management education. And to make it short, I would recommend you to take expertise in communication. There are plenty of people around now to do that because a lot of misunderstandings are particularly in the buildup of the GLDs with a lot of delays, misunderstanding, rupture. And the second thing which I would like to say is not just communication, it's education. As it was involved in some of the community applications, and you don't know how much it takes not just to educate multinationals, but for instance the banking industry, why community applications would be like a .isin or a .bank would be more important than just to have a .ubs or a .barclays. And that's not been coming as bringing from the ICANN, but for the next few months and years I hope you will do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeff.
Hi, Jeff Brueggemann with AT&T. We have been a consistent participant on ATRT issues within ICANN, and you know, there have been times when we've been frustrated that the data and the positions that we've articulated, particularly on the new domain name program, question how much those are being incorporated into the process. So a very specific recommendation would be, I know that the ATRT recommendation 7 is checked off as complete, which is the board issuing rationales for decision, but I would like to say that I think there's a big difference between a typical board action in the sense of a nonprofit board versus a conclusion of a policy development process type of decision. And I think the ATRT recommendation was specific in saying analysis of which public comments were accepted, which weren't, and why. And maybe as you're looking at clarifying the distinction between what is going to be part of a public or a policy process versus a board decision, really should go back and look at what type of decision should be coming out of each of those different processes, and I would submit they're very different. And perhaps where I would suggest that more analysis and more public documentation is needed is particularly on those policy processes to help address some of the concerns.
Yeah. So I guess part of it, Jeff, is that the rationale is a summary of kind of often the board's thinking on something, but the documentation is often extensive behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're talking about GTLDs, there's probably thousands of pages of document behind any one of those decisions. So do you just repeat all that material in the rationale, or are you making the rationale simple enough for people to read?
Right.
I guess that's the balance.
Maybe there's a balancing between, you know, here are the general points that were articulated, and here's what we decided and why. And I think particular attention to explaining why you did not accept certain positions. The losers, I think, will feel better if their positions were at least articulated and analyzed.
Thanks, Jeff. We can discuss with Bruce. And finally, last but not least,
hello.
Before we go back to Steve, Adam Peake.
Just speaking for myself, nobody else. Thank you very much. I think that the dashboard is extremely helpful, but I don't think that that is transparency. And looking back to how the ATRT team itself went around the constituencies, every meeting we saw Larry and Chris and everybody going around, that is transparency. And I think socializing what's going on in the dashboard in progress, in implementation, would be something to return to. I don't really know what dots, you know, five
but
dots.
Is it that what we're doing now, Adam? I don't understand.
It is, but it's not going around discussing it and really understanding each specific issue that may be of interest to a particular constituency.
But again, those constituencies should raise that. The board met with each constituency and asked each of those constituencies to tell us what they wanted to talk about.
So, I think I'm talking more specifically about, you know, directly on this. Well, the implementation team should be going around and doing that. I know that Bill and Binal have done that within the GAC, and that was very useful. But an example might be the NOMCOM, which is interviewing potential, well, director candidates this week, and we'll be making a selection at the end of this week. And we've had no input on that as a community. And that seems to me not the transparency that we need. I know that the Board Governance Committee has given just one example, and there would be many others, I think. That's my particular interest. But, you know, I think we can do a more transparent process and understanding how implementation is going. The dashboard is good, but I think we can do better. So please try and inform, more transparently. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Adam. That brings us to the point of wrapping up here. As I said at the beginning, we understand we're not done. We, as you've also seen, there's been quite a lot of work that has been done. Over this next period leading up to Toronto, the intention is to raise the energy level, not let it slide, and to also increase the specificity of understanding about what's been done and the details of all of that. We're getting some feedback with respect to we say we're done and complaint maybe is, well, you say you're done, but this isn't quite right or this doesn't look right. And so we're eager to take all of that into consideration and sort of sharpen the process a bit. This has been a contentful session. We obviously need to look at the comments that are accumulated here and fold those in and take some lessons away in terms of the next ATRT process. The review teams has that was the prior review team or the existing, this is no longer existing. The ATRT was a yeoman effort, very strenuous. A lot of work was put into it, and as you heard, we're on the cusp of cranking up the next version of that, ATRT2, I guess. Take seriously the prospect that you might be able to contribute, and that'll be a major contribution to the process. Anybody else want to add a closing comment? Thank you all. We've run up right against the limits of the use of these facilities. We got to turn them over for the next group coming in, which will be the whole extended public forum, and we invite you all to come and participate actively. Thank you.
shall we see.